When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, survivalists. This is The Crux True Survival Stories. I'm your host, Casey McIntosh, joined by the one, the only, Julie Henningsen. She's finally back. We have missed her for the past few weeks. I've missed her horribly, struggling all by myself, making terrible content. I apologize. Thank you for coming back to us.
Thank you for such a warm welcome. It is great to be back. I would have been here the last couple of weeks if I could, so I'm happy to be back, and I have an actually pretty incredible story that I'm excited to share with you today, Casey. Well, let's dive right in. This is the unbelievable journey. We're going to call it Surviving the Skies, the unbelievable journey of Yahya Abdi.
Ooh.
We're going to delve into Yahya Abdi's amazing journey, which was essentially a flight from California to Maui, Hawaii in April of 2014. Yahya is a 15-year-old Somali immigrant, and he made headlines around the world when he snuck into the San Jose International Airport, scurried across the runway, and hid in the wheel well of an airplane before it took off, stayed in the wheel well, and rode all the way from San Jose to Maui, a 5.5-hour flight, and survived.
Especially the airport security part of that.
Yeah, the airport security. He was up above 35,000 feet. Altitude for hours, freezing cold temperatures. I think he lost consciousness at some point. He was not conscious for the entire experience, but he came out the other end despite all odds.
That is absolutely crazy.
Serious guts. He was motivated. He had a goal in mind. It all began in his home, in his town of Santa Clara, where he'd been living not long, maybe less than a year, Santa Clara, California. He was determined to see his mother. He longed for nothing else, to be reunited with his birth mother, who he had not seen since he was about 7 years old. So, following an argument in his home where he lived with his father, his stepmother, and his siblings, he decided to run away on a Friday night. It would have been Friday, April 18th. He left home, kind of not sure what his plan was. He wandered around for about a day before he decided he needed to make his way to Ethiopia, where his mother was in a refugee camp. And he didn't have great familiarity, as most 15-year-olds don't, with world geography. So he knew he just needed to go west. He needed to fly west. And beyond that, he didn't have much of a specific plan for how he was going to get there. So shortly after 1 a.m. on the night of Sunday, April 20th, he hopped the airport fence at the San Jose International Airport in the dead of night. He slipped through security, which includes video surveillance, German Shepherd dogs, police officers on patrol, and eluded all detection for about 6 hours while he kind of figured out what his next move was.
That is unreal. It's like, where did that kid get all those skills? It's like he's an undercover agent or something.
Ducking and weaving, and nobody knew he was there. So after 6 hours of sort of wandering around and figuring out where he wanted to be, he finally chose a plane to crawl into, and he chose it randomly. His only goal was to go west, but fortunately he did get in a plane that was headed west, and he later explained that he chose that plane because it was the closest one that he could find that was going west. And how he knew it was going west, I don't know. But that's probably what he...
Maybe just the direction of the runway or the direction that the plane was sitting, you know? But the thing is, on the runway, on the tarmac, sometimes you take a U-turn and go the other direction. So that's not a guarantee.
He was rolling the dice in a lot of ways here.
He's like, well, might as well give it
so
my best
shot. So he climbed up into the wheel well of this plane and kind of hung out. And around 8 a.m. that morning, the plane took off. And he perched himself in the wheel well and just held on for the ride. The plane ride lasted 5.5 hours. And the peak altitude that the flight reached was 38,000 feet. So, I mean, when we think about that altitude,
it's, wow,
you know, 10,000 feet higher than Mount Everest, the top of the world, which we've told plenty of stories on this podcast about the challenges with altitude at a much lesser elevation. So just amazing. At 38,000 feet, the oxygen is so thin, temperatures fall well below freezing. And at some point, he did lose consciousness because of both of these factors.
You know, in some ways, that may have helped him out because it could have slowed his respiratory rate a little bit, you know, if he was unconscious.
That's what was speculated when this story came to light, is that he probably went into this metabolic shutdown mode, as young people do when they are, well, people of all ages do, but young people do it more efficiently when they're in really cold environments. So he just used that physiology and kind of cryogenically froze himself for about 5 hours and then came back to life when the plane landed in a warm, low elevation environment.
So you had told me a little bit ago before we got on our recording that describe this little perch that you got.
Yeah. So I was picturing like a wheel well of a vehicle or something, not sure exactly what this perch would be like, but I looked at some resources online and, you know, the airplane like that has sort of a big chamber or area where the landing gear and the wheels live when it's in flight. So it's a bigger space. How he accessed it, I don't know. But it's roomier than what you might imagine. And there's enough space for him to just sort of sit down and hang on for the ride without sort of like dangling by a hand. But he has a clear view out the bottom of the plane, unobstructed view of the ocean 38,000 feet below and the clouds and everything beneath.
Can you imagine? That would be so crazy.
Yeah. So crazy. So nerve-wracking.
Right. And also loud.
Loud.
In fact, probably loud.
Yeah. Very loud. And in fact, because of that, one of the few injuries that reported afterwards was some ear pain and some hearing loss, which actually went away with time. So, but yeah, due to the altitude and the noise exposure.
The other thing that I was thinking is that there must be enough room that someone who is comatose is not going to just fall out of there.
Yes, exactly. He was in a position where he could, you know, go unconscious and stay where he was without dropping out of the belly of the plane. There's video footage that you can find online from the Maui airport that captured this astonishing moment when Yahya dropped out of the wheel well onto the tarmac, disoriented but alive, about an hour after the jet had safely landed. So he hung out up there for an hour waiting for his moment to drop out. And
that's crazy. Well, and he is lucky that that plane didn't just turn around and make another leg somewhere, you know?
Exactly.
Oftentimes they probably don't do that, but...
He's lucky on so many levels. So you may be wondering, why would he risk his life to do this? What's driving this? And his story came out after this was reported, widely reported on all over the world. But his motivation stemmed from this deep longing he had to be reunited with his mother, who lived at the time in a refugee camp in Ethiopia. He hadn't seen his mother since he was about 7 years old, and he was 15 when this happened, so many years.
That is so unbelievably sad, the fact that he was separated from his mom, from his mother, and then had to, you know, the physical separation between them was so immense.
Yeah. And really all he knew that was that she was in Ethiopia. But amidst all the chaos of reporting that went on surrounding this pretty incredible event, there were some conflicting stories that emerged about his family dynamics and kind of the circumstances that led him to embark on this endeavor. It was alleged that Yahya was told by his father, who he was living with at the time in California, that his mother had actually perished in a rocket attack in the Somali capital of Mogadishu years ago. So for a period of time, apparently, he believed his mother to be dead. And then he had learned, maybe only 2 years before this incident, that she was still alive. through the local Somali community. And of course, that ignited all kinds of feelings that I'm sure you can't imagine if you've not been in that situation, but including this very strong desire to be to find her and be reunited with her. And there were also reports of unharmonious family dynamics between he and his stepmom in the home that he'd been living with. So a couple of reasons why he was really trying to get out of his current situation and find his mom, as any child would be driven to do.
Yeah, when you have an evil stepmother.
His father, after the fact, reported that the family's situation was aggravated by their displacement in Africa for many years after fleeing the home country of Somalia because of war conditions. And as a result, Yahya was not able to receive any formal education before they immigrated to the United States. So he was struggling in his high school situation. He hadn't been in school. He was in a, you know, an unfamiliar environment and missed his mama. His mother was interviewed by reporters when this all occurred. Her name is Uba Mohammed Abdulay. And she told the Associated Press that her son longed to see her, but couldn't because his father told him she was dead and didn't allow contact. And all of this turmoil surfaced in family communications. She ended up requesting that the U.S. government help her be reunited with not only him, but his two siblings, who were also her kids as well. Back to his landing in Maui, when he was discovered coming out of the wheel well of this airplane, airport officials noticed that he was disoriented. He was weak. He, you know, was cold. They gave him some teriyaki meatballs, some rice, delicious Hawaiian
That is hilarious. Not a blanket and a little bit of water, just like straight to
the teriyaki meatballs. Hey, if you are disoriented, weak, and cold, bring on the teriyaki meatballs. I'll take that.
Bring it on. That is hilarious. Not a blanket and a little bit of water, just like straight to the teriyaki meatballs.
Hey, if you are disoriented, weak, and cold, bring on the teriyaki meatballs. I'll take that.
That's hilarious.
Cue the meatballs. So I love that. Helped him initially get some strength back. He was admitted to the hospital, but he was actually in pretty good physical condition. He complained of ear pain, some hearing loss. But the airport officials commented that he spoke perfect English and didn't really have an accent. So they assumed he'd been in the U.S. for a long time. He seemed physically okay. All the noise and the vibration throughout the flight had left him with this bad, painful ringing in his ears. But that was really his only complaint.
So did they know at that point that he came from the wheel well?
They did. He told them that he was kind of sitting inside the shell of this plane and that he was aware that he had lost consciousness at some point and woke back up.
Wow.
So he ultimately regained some, not all of his hearing, but is now, you know, other than a little hearing loss and in good physical condition. He was quoted as saying, "I only did it because I didn't want to live with my stepmom. Second of all, I wanted to find my mom. I haven't seen her since I was young." He misses her. And he was able to speak to her by phone shortly after this all went down, which I'm sure felt like he accomplished part of his goal in being able to make that contact. He told her that he wanted her to come live with him in America. So apparently this is a thing. I don't know how many of these stories you've heard, but the Federal Aviation...
You mean wheel well travel?
Wheel well stowaways. It's a thing. Maybe not all wheel well stowaways, but stowaways in general.
Okay.
The Federal Aviation Administration has done studies that shed light on the phenomenon of stowaways in airplanes and have revealed some grim realities and also some miraculous survival stories like this one. And what the study found is that the survivors generally survive by going into this kind of hibernation-like state that we were talking about earlier that's induced by cold. And we know kids do better, as we said. Small people, slimmer people do better. Lower total body surface area to volume ratio makes you cool down quicker. But the FAA reports that 105 stowaways have snuck aboard 94 flights worldwide since 1947. And of those 105, about 1 in 4 survive.
What?
So 25% survival.
That's not good odds. I hope all these stowaway people know what their odds are. I'm sure they don't.
Yeah, they're not in your favor.
That's not good odds. I hope all these stowaway people know what their odds are. I'm sure they don't.
Yeah, they're not in your favor.
I'm wondering, do any of these stowaways go in on like checked bags? Because that's the way that I would think about doing it. Like a firm checked bag.
Other creative ways to
and a giant dog crate. Or, you know, sometimes it's weird to think about this, but sometimes horses are transported by air in trailers, you know, things like that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, it does seem like there would be maybe a more clever approach to try and making this work. Yeah.
So where in the airplane are these people stowing away aside from the wheel well? Is this like a common place? Is this the only place you're talking about or other places in the plane?
Well, I'm guessing there's other places, but the wheel well was the most common one I came across. And actually, I'll share another pretty remarkable wheel well story for you here in just a sec. The last part of their conclusion, the FAA's conclusion when they did this study, is that the actuals are probably higher because there's likely survivors that hop out of that wheel well or wherever they were stowing away and escape unnoticed. So
right.
This is only representing the ones that they've found. And also they theorize that bodies could be falling into the ocean undetected, you know, stowaways that go unconscious and aren't able to stay up in the shell of the plane. But
so out of the three quarters of these stowaways that don't make it, how are they detected? Because you think that you just have dead bodies in wheel wells that you never knew about.
Or maybe they find them unconscious, or maybe they see them jump out, or maybe they seek medical.
I'm just saying the ones that don't make it, how are they finding these people? If you're dying in the wheel well, what happens to you then? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
like when they're inspecting the airplane, however often that happens.
Yeah. Or x-raying luggage and see like a body in there or something. I don't know. So in the aftermath of this ordeal, Yahya interviewed many times. And as time went by, he just kind of went back to normal teenage life. He expressed hopes and dreams for joining the U.S. Army when he finished high school. When they asked what he'd been up to, he said, I've been going to the movies.
Being a celebrity, no big deal. It's fine.
Being a celeb, enjoying his 15 minutes of fame. As for anyone thinking of repeating this stunt, Yahya did offer advice. He said, they shouldn't run away.
That's sound advice, Yahya, sound advice. My advice would be wear a down suit and earplugs.
Oxygen. Yeah, and bring a little O2.
Yep. A little water would probably be a good idea as well. Except for it would freeze. So never mind.
So these airplane stowaway stories, it's kind of a rabbit hole. I'll share another quick one with you that's equally unbelievable. This took place in 1996. A 23-year-old Indian man, Pardeep Saini, survived a 10-hour flight from New Delhi in India to London Heathrow Airport in the wheel well of British Airways Boeing 747.
Wow.
So a longer flight. His 19-year-old brother, Vijay, was with him trying to make the same attempt, and he died, exposed to temperatures of minus 76 degrees Fahrenheit.
What? Cold. Wow. Especially if you're from India.
Right. Used to that warm weather. So it's speculated, again, that Pardeep's survival is like just exactly what you said, the result of hypoxia, low oxygenation combined with hypothermia just kind of creates this perfect storm for low metabolic needs, almost zero metabolic need, kind of putting him into this state of suspended animation that can keep young, healthy people alive. He was found after landing wandering on the tarmac at Heathrow, and they had also fled India for kind of political reasons. They were being accused of militant activities and were trying to make a quick exit.
So in those instances, I wonder if those people are sent back to their country of origin after all of that.
Well, interestingly, our protagonist here, Yahya, they wanted to send him to live with an aunt in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, after these events unfolded, just to kind of get him in a new home environment. And it was up in the air as to whether or not the FAA was going to allow him to fly to Minnesota.
So his dad wanted him to go to Minnesota, or who made that determination of where he should go?
There's some conflicting reports, but I think it was more of a child, social services decision or recommendation. Because of these events, his mom was really inspired to try and make it to America and get custody. And there was some custody dispute that...
Right. Social services got involved. But what about this instance of the guy that went to London? What happened with him?
Once he arrived in London, his application for asylum, political asylum, was refused. So he was returned.
Wow.
India.
That's so sad. His brother died for no reason, you know?
Yeah. And another interesting logistical kind of bit about this, there's no access to the baggage hold area from the wheel well of these planes. Mm-hmm. And this Pardeep Saini from India reported kind of the same thing. Moments after the plane took off, the last thing he recalls was
wow, crazy.
So there you go. Another captivating episode of the Crux True Survival Stories.
Oh my gosh, my mind is a little bit blown because, I think I recall hearing this story just vaguely. I remember hearing something about it, but just trying to picture what that experience would be like, it's mind-boggling.
Oh yeah, I think I would assume death was imminent at any point along that journey. Although, his youth was working in its favor. I got the impression from what I read that he just really didn't know what he was getting himself into and was very optimistic about what the outcome might be.
Which is the way that probably you think when you're 15. When you were researching the people that survived, were most of them children? Or did you see anything about that?
I didn't see anything about that, no. Yeah, I didn't look at their ages.
I'm never going to be thinking about flying the same way ever again. I'll always be wondering, is there somebody in the wheel well?
Yeah, I'll always be trying to look through the floorboards of the plane
and watching the landing gear.
Request a seat that has good visibility of the wheels.
Yeah, if I was in that situation, I would wait till everybody was deplaning and then I would just slip in line behind them. Make it look like, I was a passenger. Couch. Yeah, exactly.
Grab a piece of luggage as you walk by.
Carry a wine bottle with you. So if you're looking disoriented, no one questions you. Just stay drinking. Don't worry about me.
In your head-to-toe giant down parka bodysuit. Your oxygen mask.
Yeah. My noise-canceling headphones. Exactly. Natural. Just be natural. Wow. I love that story. Thanks for sharing, Julie. That was a little bit different than what we normally do.
I just love when you survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know if his mom ever...
I don't know. It's probably that information probably out there somewhere, but I don't know.
It makes me realize how lucky I am to just be with my kids. Some parents just don't have that choice. Well, I hope he got you reunited with his mother.
Before we wrap up, we'd like to ask your support in spreading the word about the Crux True Survival Stories. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to visit our Instagram page at The Crux Podcast. We encourage you to share our latest post on your stories, helping us reach more fellow survival enthusiasts and storytellers. If you haven't already, please consider leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback means the world to us and helps us continue bringing you compelling stories of survival. And if you have any survival stories that you'd like to share with us or topics you'd like us to explore, feel free to write us about that at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com.
Yes, thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And we just appreciate it. That's all I can say. Have a great week.